Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, The Cultural Christ, we will explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our culture impacts faith. Now for part two of this interview. So what is it about Jesus that draws you to that cross-cultural interaction? What is it about your faith that makes, like, you're shaping your cultural identity through interacting with people who are not like you on a regular basis? Why do you do that biblically, theologically?
This is something that I learned. Like, theology is weird like this, right? Because, like, you would think that the knowledge of the truth precedes, like, the action, but that's not. In my case, it's not always true, right? I found myself doing and living incarnational ministry type things, like living out the doctrine of the incarnation through my neighbors and ministries and friends before I knew all those words or what those concepts were. But now if I were to, like, you know, here today in 2023, the school that I lead, Eternity College, we do a trip to Israel every other year. And the first time that I went to Israel, we were like on the Sea of Galilee, like, I don't know, touching the water, some silly thing that we were doing, right? And I had a realization that the Sea of Galilee and these surrounding regions of, like, Galilee, Nazareth, and then, like, over to where Jerusalem was, this area is smaller than Los Angeles. And that where Jesus spent most of his time, which is just like Nazareth and, like, the Galilean hills and stuff like that, is about the size of, like, Canoga Park and West Hills. It's this area that I live in here, right?
Wow.
And I had something just clicked in my head that if Jesus didn't need to, like, travel the world to change the world, if he could just take, like, 12 dudes and, like, you know, a few hundred people or whatever, and he at the end, he does say, yeah, go do this other places, of course. But Jesus didn't feel that, like, there was something less about his ministry to just live in and amongst the people that God sent him to be with and not really leave, you know, not really go other places, not do the big missions trips and not, like, you know, collaborate with other churches in, like, North Morocco or whatever. Like, just, he didn't do any of that, right? He just lived faithfully with a very small group of people. In a very small geographical area. And that's why, you know, that's why we live where we live. That's why we're a part of a church that really kind of, we only really focus on, like, one square mile. Like, there's 7,000 people in the square mile. So that's, like, plenty. But it's also, I walk to the grocery store on purpose. All my kids play sports across the street at the rec center. I only coach over there. We have the money for them to play travel sports, probably. I don't know if we do. I think it's, like, crazy expensive, but.
Yeah,
I would never do it. I would just never do it, right? We got offered for my oldest son to join, like, this free wrestling team that, like, LAPD does, which is probably not that great, but whatever. They, like, a free team. But then I found out it was 3 miles away. I was like, oh, no, that's too far. We don't do that. Like, like, our life is not going to go that far. Jesus didn't really live much of his life that far. Maybe 3 miles would have been fine. But, like, I know I'm not, like, you know, that's not, like, the answer. And there's nothing wrong with, like, people who are part of church denominations that are, like, you know, we are the churches in the Southwestern United States. But there's something just really compelling for me about the smallness of Jesus's life and ministry and how clearly it's had a global impact, you know?
Yeah.
And he didn't really need to do all that other stuff. Yeah.
So in that vein, talk about your local church community and the people that you are with either throughout the week or on a Sunday. What does church engagement look like for your family?
Yeah. I mean, our church is, I was just about to say, our church is very different, but literally every pastor was like, my church is so unique.
right.
So I don't know if we're that different. I don't know a lot of churches that are like us, but we're very low buffer. We only preach twice a month. We only meet together 3 times a month, like, as a whole church. Our primary, like, the blood flow of our church is the fact that we all live within 2 miles or so of each other. It's not, we don't have, like, a membership class. I couldn't imagine trying to, like, create one. It's almost like a membership thing of our church. Like, if you have kids, they're going to play sports. They're going to play right here at the rec center. Yeah. I mean, obviously people have individual needs for education for their kids and stuff like that. But like, you would strongly consider putting your kids in like the local elementary school and the local, you know, junior high. The analogy that I use with folks sometimes is there's an alleyway behind our apartment complexes, which is like, there's this strip. It's like 1/8 of a mile and like 3,000, 4,000 of us live in this alleyway or like on one side of the alleyway. No matter how much money you make or what car you drive or what your home life is like or how many generations live under your roof, we all have to deal with that stupid piece of crap alley, right? And people throwing their like refrigerators and freezers out there or the trash truck that's like clearly paid by the hour. So he's just like checking his TikTok instead of getting out of the way. Like, we all have that struggle of the alley. And there's something about having that struggle. And maybe I'm learning, this is like therapy. I'm learning about like growing up, right? Like, maybe this is like the small town I grew up in. And yeah. Like, there's something about us all struggling with the alley, or there's this meter maid dude that, I mean, I don't want anybody to die, but I wouldn't mind if she got transferred somewhere else. Yeah. And we all know her and we all can't stand her because just randomly this lady shows up and just writes $15,000 worth of tickets, you know, on all of our cars. Cause you can't really park. It's very hard to park legally around here. So you just kind of like shove your car in somewhere and then hope you can get it the next day, get it out. You know, as like a place to visit, this isn't very fun. It's not even that fun to live here, I guess. But like, I love that we're all struggling with that stuff together. And there's something about like the pain of the alley or that stupid meter maid lady or like the helicopters that are just like wake up your baby in the middle of the night, or like some random dude just deciding it's like July 14th and they're like, we're going to test our fireworks for next year, you know, and just blowing stuff up outside. I like that smallness that we all experience all that together and we all struggle through all that together. I think I like that and I'm drawn to that because that's what I see that Jesus did, you know, living with people, struggling with people, not eating with people, having to find solutions to lack of resources, you know, for the greater good of everyone else, not just like, I mean, Jesus is a popular teacher. There's 5,000 people hungry, like him and his boys could have just like gone in town and got something. My favorite prophet is Jeremiah for a lot of reasons, but one of them is that, so Jeremiah is preaching against the false prophets who are all saying that God's not going to allow Babylon to take over Israel and destroy the temple. And Jeremiah is trying to tell them, nope, that's what's going to happen. Y'all need to go to Babylon, be good people, you know, seek the flourishing of the city. But then when Nebuchadnezzar comes and destroys Jerusalem, Jeremiah gets offered, do you want to come? Like, you've been great, dude. Like, you've been an awesome evangelist for me and for Babylon. Like, I'll hook you up. And Jeremiah's like, nah, I'm gonna stay here. I'm gonna stay here with all the people who you didn't want, basically, because Nebuchadnezzar took all the people he wanted and he deported them. And there's beauty in like Ezekiel being a part of a refugee camp and like the visions that he got and all that kind of stuff. But Jeremiah, you know, he just decided to stay with all the folks that Nebuchadnezzar thought weren't worth deporting into his, and he just lived there. That's it. You know, he just like lived out the rest of his life with the lowest of the low that were like the leftovers. For me, that sounded paternalistic. Like, it's not like the people I live near are the lowest of the low, but we are like a forgotten, neglected, abused neighborhood. Like, there's the amount of resources that, well, for the people who end up listening to this, like, we're 7 miles from Calabasas, which is like where Will Smith lives and the Kardashians and trillions, billions of dollars, seven miles away. And the average household income here is like $37,000, which in LA, a living wage is 70. So like, people are struggling less than 10 miles away from like disgusting amounts of wealth. And we're just kind of like, LA didn't want us, you know, and this is true of a lot of little neighborhoods in LA, but like the fame of Hollywood and LA and all that kind of stuff, like this is not a place that they really wanted to deal with, you know. But I love being here with, you know, being the Jeremiahs and being that type of, James, same thing. I mean, James stayed back in Jerusalem. Everyone else left and went on different missions trips or whatever. You know, Paul did a bunch of them, wrote a bunch of letters, made some people mad, planted some churches. It was all great, cool stuff. But Jimbo just stayed in Jerusalem and pastored people in Jerusalem. Yeah. And then when crap hit the fan, like he did his best to try and encourage them and care for them and make sure that resources from these other churches could help support them. But he didn't leave. He didn't go on the trip to Corinth or Thessalonica or whatever. He just stayed there. Some people got stayed. Yeah.
I love it. I love how you're drawing out a value in the ministry of Jesus. You use the phrase incarnational to describe a way of living that shapes your identity and who you are in context, but not just like where you live, but very locally where you live.
Yeah.
I love that you bring that up in an age of digital reach and flying across the world and like what it means to be a global citizen, which is fashionable, but then what does parish ministry look like? What does rootedness look like? What does being among people that potentially are not like you look like when that's all over the gospels, all over the apostles, and like you said, Jesus? That's really that's really good.
Yeah. And I have a bad habit of like talking about small life as if it's like, well, that's what Jesus did, which kind of implies that if you're not doing that, then clearly you're not doing what Jesus did. What's a good example of this? Okay, meatloaf. Do you like meatloaf?
Under the right ketchup conditions.
Okay,
Ernesto.
I think meatloaf is the most disgusting dish that's ever been made. And you haven't tried my mom's. I've tried your mom's meatloaf. It's disgusting. There's no such thing as good meatloaf to me. I cannot understand why folks would ever want to overcook ground beef and put ketchup on it. I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
But people love it, right? And for me, for years, decade plus, it was really hard for me to understand. It probably would have been hard for me to understand why Paul was doing all the stuff he was. I'm like, dude, there's so much going on right here. Like, there's people literally like dying and suffering and poverty. And like, why do you need to go to Galatia or Corinth or Damascus, whatever it is? Why do you need to go to those different places? But I've learned that, you know, that's a part of it. And God does call some folks to do that. But that's right now, that's definitely sexier to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
To just be like a no name, whatever, in a small neighborhood that nobody even knows about. It's not that cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your argument, Ernesto, it has to start there. So we are in the context of our family, of our community, of our ethnic group, of our local area. And it should be from a place of health and consistency within that community that our identity as humans is built outwards into those other spaces, as opposed to vice versa. I am all these outside things that people see and know and hear, but I'm not really something local. And at that point, it's a mirage. At that point, it's something else. Yeah. And Paul's counter argument is beginning of 2 Corinthians, where he says, my letter is the impact I've had in the lives and hearts of people cross-culturally as to why you should listen to me. He didn't say because of my resume or my fame or my reach or all these things externally. He's like, because I actually have made a deep impact, even if it's for a short amount of time.
Yep.
And to your point, we have lost that largely. And that's something I'm wrestling with, having recently moved to Tucson with my family, is okay, now we're here. What does local engagement look like? And I felt not only convicted, but disrupted in my faith going, coming out of COVID, which taught us we don't need to be local anymore, which is not okay.
Yeah. It's weird.
What does it look like to engage now locally again, having moved, in kids and sports like you talked about? And so some of it's like our age stage. I really appreciate you processing that. I want to end with a few questions specific to cultural identity. And maybe it's your family that you're currently in, you, your wife, your kiddos, or you could speak personally. But how has Jesus dignified your cultural identity? Where do you feel like dignified as a person made in God's image in who you are? And then where have you seen Jesus confront you in your culture of origin? Let's land with kind of those two.
Yeah. I think I grew up amongst a people, if you could say it that way, that James 5:17, like the new, well, James 5:17 says something, I don't know, I'm not going to try and quote the appendix, but it's something like, it's something like, if you know the right thing to do and you choose not to do it, then to you it's sin, something like that. And I grew up around people who the inverse of that is what they believed, which was that if you know you're supposed to do the right thing, then you ought to do the right thing. And it literally doesn't matter who sees you, or if there's an impact or anything like that. And that has been something that I feel like that the gospel and the kingdom has just continued to reassure me of. Wow. That like we can, you know, our family fosters, we didn't really talk about that, but like sometimes it feels like you're not helping. Sometimes it feels like you're hurting. Sometimes it feels like you're actually like, dang, like that was great. That was awesome. We have this wonderful, beautiful relationship with this family. And our culture tells us that that's more significant if more people know about it. But like 7 people know, you know, and so it's like it feels insignificant because it's just like this one little thing that we did. But it took 110% of our resources and energy to pour into like that situation as a family. Even like the different kids that we have with us now, bio kids and foster kids, like literally every single day does matter and Jesus cares about it. And it doesn't matter that 99% of what we do, nobody sees. And you know, and even in our ministry, and even like, you know, I'm the president of a school and a school that nobody knows about. Right. And so like,
yeah,
there's like, that's another part of it. It's like, well, I still need to lead the school well. And I still need to like care for the students that we have and the staff that we have, even if nobody's going to know about who we are, because there's a lie in our culture that says it's not significant if people don't know. Yeah. And I think that Jesus kind of turns that over and says, well, I know. So that's good. Right.
Yeah. What are some things that you really feel like Jesus has confronted in you and who you are as you've matured in your faith?
Like any mantra, I'm sure I've stolen this and changed it from a bunch of different people, but something that I've been saying over and over and over for the last like 3-4 years, 5 years-ish, that I've kind of owned as my own. But if I ever do like a retrospective look, I realized that I needed to learn this and Jesus needed to confront me on this. And that is that there are Jesus loving, Bible believing Christians all over the world that think very differently than you do. And that whether it's just cultural opinions or traditions or right or wrong, or even like doctrinal things like infant baptism or how we do church or what liturgy or should we pay our pastors or all that kind of stuff. I definitely grew up in a culture that taught me other people do things differently, but we're doing it the right way. I had to learn that, well, what the Bible calls wisdom, that there are multiple right answers. There are multiple ways that the Spirit can lead somebody. The Spirit of God can call Daniel in exile to refuse to blend with culture whatsoever. And then he can call Esther to literally marry into the most powerful family and become a Persian queen. And they're both in exile around the same time.
Wow.
And it's both good. It's both exactly what God wants his covenant people to be doing. And that is something that doesn't fly well. I mean, I'm just like, for some reason, I'm like worried that like some random guy at my mom's church is going to hear this and know I'm talking about him, you know, but like, it just doesn't, the idea that like Jesus loving Bible believing Christians around the world think the opposite thing that you do. And they, yeah. but that the Spirit is probably leading both of us in the direction that we are. That was hard for me. And it's still hard sometimes, but that was a hard thing for me.
Thanks for sharing. Man. Thanks for being on. It's awesome.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.